Hi, I'm Jenny Nash, and you're listening to the Hashtag AmWriting Podcast. This is a Write Big session where I'm bringing you short episodes about the mindset shifts that help you stop playing small and write like it matters. Today, I'm talking about setting goals for your work and what you want your metric for success to be. And here with me is AJ Harper, author of the book, Write a Must Read, Craft a Book That Changes Lives, Including Your Own. Hi, AJ.
Hi, Jenny.
Welcome again.
I'm so glad to be back.
So I love Write a Must Read because while it is specifically for nonfiction writers, I also recommend it for memoir and fiction writers. AJ gets at something really critical in this book, which is that you don't write a book about something, you write a book for someone. And we talked about that in a previous episode with AJ as a guest that I will link to in the show notes. But what we're talking about today is AJ has this term and this concept that she teaches and that she helps people do, and it's called writing a top three book. And I think this as a metric for success is just everything. So will you tell us what you mean by that?
Yes. So we all have those books that are on our personal top three lists of a specific genre. So what are your fave business books? What are your fave books on grief? What are your fave memoirs? And I think we need to set out to write a book that becomes someone's top three. So it doesn't have to be top three as decided by some force and, you know, some high mucky muck or the New York Times, but people, the intended readers. So if you think about it, like, what are the three books on your nightstand? What are the three books you'll never part with? You know, you go from house to house, we purge our books, which are the ones you keep. Those are the books that we want to write. And we should always strive for that, to write a classic like that.
So do you find that when you're coaching writers or guiding them, which you do through lots of different mechanisms, you have a community, you have workshops, you have intensive programs, what mindset shift do people need to get to that idea of, I want to write a top three, and to get out of the thing I know you and I both can't stand, which is I want to make a lot of money, or I want to get an agent in a big five book deal, or I want that Amazon bestseller flag, like, or I want a book in 90 days, like all those metrics of success that don't amount to what people really want. Do your writers have a hard time shaking off those more common metrics of success?
For sure. I mean, first of all, you and I know 90 days, that's not a success metric. That's somebody trying to, I don't know, hustle, check a box, be transactional about authorship. But here is the thing. You're going for these big metrics, big book sales or bestsellers or getting an agent. And if you would just focus on writing a book that's somebody's top three, that's a classic, that becomes mandatory reading, all those things come to you anyway. So yeah. That's the irony. In fact, it's in greater quantities, but we have it backwards. If you focus on, I'm going to deliver a book that stands the test of time, that people cannot part with, that they underline, dog ear, highlight. How much do you love a picture of one of your books, Jenny? And someone's got Post-its all over it, and it's just a hot mess.
Yeah.
Looks like they ran over it with a car. It's because they've opened it so many times. It's gorgeous, like a piece of art in my view. You don't get that when you write something transactional, but you can get people talking about the book when you write something intended to be somebody's top three. When more people talk about it, those success metrics fall into place automatically.
So why do you think these other metrics became so prominent in our industry?
I think that's just how we measure things, especially in the US. I think it's our capitalist focused on productivity kind of society. And I don't think we know. How do you measure that a stranger loves your book and is recommending it? You can't see it.
Yeah.
Also, I think people don't trust themselves to write something great.
Ooh, say more.
Well, it's easier to think, oh, okay, I'm just going to focus on these book sales or just get it done quickly. This is my secret theory. This is not based on science. But I've always thought that the reason people choose the fast and easy way is because they figure they're not good enough to write that book that's someone's top three. So they settle for fast. They settle for efficient. I'm just going to get it done. And they don't have faith in themselves.
What do you think they tell themselves about that book that they write, though? Like, do they tell themselves, well, I didn't give it my all, I just did it fast, it's just a thing. What do you think they tell themselves?
I think they do because they come so often. I have authors come to me that have already written a book, and now they say, "Now I want to write a better book." Or I actually have someone who came to me who's written multiple bestsellers, and I think 13 books, something like that, and just wanted to learn to be a better writer. So knew that he wasn't up to par.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. But as you know, they can learn it, right? They can learn it.
I just heard a story, and I'm going to get all the numbers wrong, but the numbers were big. It was a person who had sold a debut novel, and I believe it was seven figures, got a big deal, and had set out to game the market, had set out to write that book that would get a lot of money, and did it, and then had to go out and talk about this book and publicize it and be in the world about it, and didn't like the book. They'd made all the money, they'd gotten all the things, and now they had to be out in the world with it. And they're like, I don't want to be out in the world with this book. And I thought, this person will not talk about that situation, so I can't have them on, but understandably so. But I was like, that's an amazing, amazing story, because imagine, right? Imagine getting all the big wins, that we all say we want, like the book deal, the money, the movie, the thing, and not liking your book.
It sounds like that's like a nightmare to me.
I
I don't even know how she finished it, or if it is, I'm assuming it's a she. I don't
Isn't
know.
that interesting? It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. Getting to this, shaking off those metrics and getting this to this idea of writing a book that people, specific people, will love. Can I turn the spotlight on you? Is there a category where you could talk about one of your top threes in a category and tell us what that means to you as a reader?
Yes. I mean, I have my favorite, probably my favorite book of all time is Love Medicine by Louise Erdrich. And I talk about it incessantly. And I'm thinking people probably wonder, is she going to read, what about, is she reading anything else? She keeps mentioning this book, but it will always be a nightstand book for me. I have it in multiple formats because it's been re-released, anniversary editions, all of that. And I'll never part with it or any copy of it. And it's because it's the first book that I felt like I loved the language so much, I wanted to read it out loud. And I've since read a lot of her other books. I've read almost all of them. But that one just hit me in the heart and made me fall in love with language in a whole new way. So I'll recommend that book as a starting point into her body of work, and I'll read it over and over again. I don't know that she set out to do that, but I know that book is one that I will always recommend.
And that's fiction, right?
It's fiction, yeah.
So you're saying you talk about it all the time, you teach from it, you recommend it, and you're teaching nonfiction. What are you saying to people about it?
Well, I don't teach from it. I just recommend it.
Oh, okay.
Do you want one that I teach from?
No, I loved hearing that one, but I mean, yes, and I loved hearing that one, but what's one you teach from that's a top three?
Well, if any of my students are listening, they already know what I'm going to say, which is the War of Art by Steve Pressfield. And that's because it was a game changer for me to understand the blocks I was having and what was really going on. I want people to see what a real mindset shift is like in a book, because the perspective shift for me changed so dramatically that it was actually all I needed. I didn't even need the whole book. I just needed to understand one thing in that book. And that is that resistance, writer's block, whatever you call it, he calls it resistance, is a force in the universe, according to him, that is like gravity. And so it's ever present. You can't escape it. And it's not personal. And that was all it took. I didn't need to read any of the rest of the book. And so I want students to understand the power of a transformational message like that, that on its own can set people on their course to change.
I love that. Well, and what I love about your concept of a top three book is you can ask any reader and they're going to instantly know what it is for them. And I love the experience of reading a book and wanting to tell everyone about it. It's like, you can't stop me, right? I must tell you about this book that I just read that I loved. And so if a writer uses that as a metric for success, that I want to write something that some certain group of people are going to consider that book for them, how does that change the writing process?
Well, I think that it shifts it so that you're thinking about them the whole way through. Where are they starting from? Where do they want to go? How do they respond to your content on every page? All of that. But even more than that, it's holding yourself to this higher standard. It's believing you can. What does that book look like? What if I could write that? What would that be? Instead of thinking, how do people write books? So often I get questions, well, should I do this or that? Well, what's the right way for this? And of course, I don't have an answer for any of that. It's reader dependent and it's also your vision. But if you ask yourself, what do I have to do so that this becomes so beloved, this book? It changes the way you think about it instead of thinking, what is the protocol? What's the standard? What am I allowed to do?
What does
People
the
have
market want? What
What does
is,
the market want? Well, yeah. And now you've written something people will respond to on such a visceral level to have your book loved like that. I once had Michael Port, who wrote Book Yourself Solid and Steal the Show and other New York Times bestsellers, say, I think you should have called it the number one book or top one book, not top three. And I call it top three because I love the fact that a book would be among other treasured books, not just the top one, but that the, you know what I'm saying?
I totally know what you're saying, and I love it so much that it's top three, because if you say to somebody, what's your top number one all-time book, I feel like they're going to be like, wah, like it's too hard. But if you say top three, or maybe you give them a category to make it easier, I feel like they can do that. And the fact that books sit among other books is real. Like you talked about the nightstand, where I am looking across the room, I have a stack of beloved books that are my top ones, and they sit together. They do. They sit there together. And so I love the idea of a writer wanting to be on that shelf. And your idea informed me when I was working on the right big concept. And I had this stack of books that I recommended that I love. They don't necessarily relate to each other, really. And I sat down and thought, why do I love them? And I did an analysis of what it was about them that put them in that stack. And I realized I want to be on that stack. What kind of book do I need to write to be on that stack? The three is really important to me. It's a group you want to be part of.
We love books and we love writing and we love authors. But there's something also when you say, I want to be the number one, that's the wrong energy to bring to the book. These are conversations we're having with readers and we're not the only people talking to them. But let's try and be on the shelf. Let's not just get the book done. Let's try to be pictured when people say, these are my best books I read this summer, or this is my new fave about XYZ. You want your book there? I remember the first time somebody showed a stack, and in the stack was my book with Bird by Bird.
You're like,
And
I'm done now. I'm
I
done
was like,
here.
thank you so much. Let me just frame that. There's other books besides Bird by Bird, but that one I think is a classic, and you should strive to for your book to be eventually become a classic.
I love that. I feel like we should just end on that, because it's like, that's just the mic drop. That's it there. And I know you'll be back for other right big sessions in the future, but thank you for sharing this idea about writing a top three. And I usually ask what you could leave writers with, an idea or something to reflect on or to concern themselves with around this idea as a kind of closing thing. We've already done so much of that, but is there one thing you would suggest or urge or hope that writers might do around this idea?
Sometimes I ask writers to ask themselves, what would I write if I had no barriers? And it's just a simple question. I'm sure you've probably asked it, but to just think, what would I write? To get into that energy so that you can combat the little voices, the little inner critic trolls that are telling you not to bother.
That's so good. That's so good. All right, everyone, until next time, stop playing small and write like it matters.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.